down. Thanks for listening. Coming up next is So What's Your Story with Hank Rubicek, KPFT, Houston.
This is 90.1 KPFT FM and FM HD1 Houston, with translators at 89.5 FM K208DG Galveston and 91.9 FM K220KC Huntsville. Houston's community station, 90.1 KPFT, a Pacifica radio station.
Great storytellers take listeners on astonishing journeys. I'm Hank Rubicek, producer of So What's Your Story, Thursdays at 5. Our award-winning show has brought you stories since 2008, and with your generous donations, we're going to keep it going. 713-526-5738 or kpft.org, and point to So What's Your Story as one of your favorites. Extraordinary stories told by ordinary people only on KPFT Houston's Community Radio.
Welcome back, folks, to So What's Your Story, the only program originating in Houston, Texas, devoted to storytelling. And it's found only on Houston's community station, KPFT. I'm Larry Thompson, tonight's host, and I'm ready to share the power of story with you by placing a spotlight on a teller whose stories are going to take you on voyages through windows of their souls and on financial excursions. No, fanciful excursion. That's what that says. I'll tell you what, storytelling is great, y'all. I'm sure this is not the first time you've seen us and heard us here on So What's Your Story. You've tuned your radio or your computer or your tablet or your phone to 90.1, So What's Your Story. You listen to 90.1, and the station is listener-supported, so I'm sure you see the connection there, and it's that time again for you to consider becoming a member or elevating your current membership in support of this station. Call 713-526-5738, or you can give online at kpft.org. Your membership in Houston's community station is truly the gift that keeps on giving. Now, tonight's great stories. Folks, we've got a treat for you. I have sitting here Ms. Darlene Dufour. Now, she is a self-proclaimed storyteller for the young at heart. I imagine that would encompass everybody listening right now to us. She's a Conroe transplant from Louisiana. She writes and tells stories that warm the heart and inspire hope in listeners of all ages. We could all do with a little hope these days sometimes. Darlene began telling stories to elementary students when she was a school counselor. She's performed in several of these United States, as well as in South Africa, Australia, and France. Her fourth book, Seeds of Greatness, is popular with youth and adults. And adult listeners sometimes tell her that they're going to send that book along with a packet of seeds to their adult children to share. Darlene, how the heck are you? How is your summer progressing?
I'm doing fine, and the summer is hot.
Have you known a hotter summer than this?
No, and I just can't stop thinking about what it must have been like for our ancestors before air conditioning.
Before air conditioning, you get up in the morning, you get all dressed, you step outside, you need to come back in and change. You're sweaty already.
Absolutely.
Now this is Texas.
Of course, I'm a Southern lady. We don't sweat. We glisten.
We glisten. That's exactly right. Now, there have been some hot summers in Louisiana when you was over there.
Yes. Oh, yes.
But this
is just as hot and just as little rain.
This is oppressive. My grass isn't green. It's some sort of shade of light brown. I don't know how that is. But we are here to hear some stories. Darlene has brought a crop of stories with her this evening. And your first story, I feel like this is going to give folks a good taste of your style. Now, this is a personal story. And this is personal to you. Is this your struggle to convince your first grade teacher and all your friends that you really did not have a middle name?
That's right.
All right. Well, let's hear Marilyn.
Mama and I liked going to the movies. About once a month, Mother and I would ride the bus into town and she'd pay the bills and then we'd go see a movie. Except for the cowboy movies with Lash LaRue and Johnny Mac Brown, the only movie that I really remember was the Marilyn Miller story. I was only 6 years old, too young to understand that the movie was a biography of the 1920s Broadway singer and dancer, but I was mesmerized with the singing and dancing. I liked the way Marilyn's cobalt blue dress flared as Marilyn, played by June Haver, sang and danced to Look for a Silver Lining. I spent hours imitating her singing and dancing to the best of my ability. Well, in the summer of 1950, we moved from a housing project in Pineville to 10 acres of piney woods outside Pollock, Louisiana, and my life changed drastically. There were no other children around to play with, so I depended on my imagination even more for entertainment, but it was very lonely. That's one reason I was excited to start school the day Monday after Labor Day. I adored my first grade teacher, Miss Cherry Groves. Her curly blonde hair and red Cupid's bow mouth fascinated me. She told us to call her Miss Jerry. During the first weeks of school, Miss Jerry spent some time each afternoon questioning students about their families. We watched each other solemnly as the chosen students sat in the adult-sized chair beside Miss Jerry's large wooden desk. She would ask the student a question and then write the answer on a large white cardboard paper, and she would use this gold fountain pen that she occasionally filled from a bottle of black India ink. After a few days, I noticed there was a pattern to the questions. Miss Jerry asked the same questions in the exact same order to everyone. The first question was always, "What's your name?" "Bubba." "That's not your real name. That's a nickname. Now, what's your real name? What's your full name?" "I don't know. Everybody calls me Bubba." "Well, go home and find out what your real name is and tell me tomorrow." "Now, what's your daddy's name?" "Daddy." "That's not his name. What does your mama call him?" "Honey." "Go home and find out what your daddy's real name is and yours and come back and tell me tomorrow." Well, I knew the answers to some of her questions, but some of them stumped me. So I had to go home and ask Mother the answer to those questions, like, "What's your mama's maiden name?" "What was her name before she married your daddy?" Or, "What's your address?" It soon became apparent that Miss Jerry was working her way one by one down the row, asking each student the exact same question in the exact same order. I paid close attention to the questions Miss Jerry asked so I'd be ready when it came my turn. And since I was on the back row, I had ample time to learn the questions and to realize something. I was different from my classmates. Not only was I taller and heavier than most of them, but I was different in two other ways. One was that all of them had at least one brother or sister. I was my parents' only child. And the second one was that every one of them, regardless of what they said, had a middle name. I didn't. I asked Mama about that, and she said, your daddy named you, and he didn't give you a middle name. I wanted to name you Dixie, but he named you Darlene. Well, as the days passed, those of us who had not yet been called upon to supply our family data, which I now realize was for our cumulative record, that's the record that follows the student from kindergarten, although we started with first grade, all the way through high school graduation. And so at recess, we would practice the interview. We would grill each other on the questions. What's your name? My best friend asked me. Darlene Long. What's your middle name? I don't have one, I said truthfully. I knew what she was going to say next. Sure enough, just like Miss Jerry, she said, everybody has a middle name. You have one, you just don't like it. Now, what's your middle name? I don't have one, I repeated. Other students started getting in on it, trying to trick me as though one of them could make me tell my middle name. I finally decided if my classmates didn't believe me, there was no way I was going to convince Miss Jerry that I didn't have a middle name. Several days later, it was my turn. I sat in the big chair confidently. I was prepared. I knew my mother's maiden name was Beatrice Thompson. My daddy's name was W.T. Long, and he worked for the Rock Island Railroad. My address was Route 2, Pollock, Louisiana. What's your name? Miss Jerry asked. Darlene Long. What's your middle name? I don't have one, I replied truthfully. I waited, knowing what she'd say next. Everyone has a middle name. You just don't like yours. Now, what's your middle name? I could hear the annoyance in her voice. I could feel the class holding their breath, waiting for my reply. Would I fess up? Marilyn, I lied. I held my breath, anticipating the next most important question and the change it would bring in my life. Without looking up from her writing, Miss Jerry said, and what do they call you at home? I hung my head. Marilyn, I lied again, waiting eagerly for the statement that I knew would follow. Well, since they call you Marilyn at home, we'll call you Marilyn at school. I saw the smirks on some of my classmates' faces as I walked back to my desk. I didn't care. I was Marilyn at last. Recess was fun now. No more being taunted with, you call Fatty darling, when a boy called me by my name. I reveled in my new identity until the day I saw Mama standing in the doorway of my classroom. Miss Jerry saw her too. May I help you? She asked. I'm Darlene's mother. I just wanted to check on her and see how she's doing. Miss Jerry frowned. Darlene, I don't have a Darlene. I sank low in my desk. Yes, you do. She's sitting right there, Mother said, pointing at me. Oh, you mean Marilyn. Who's Marilyn? Mother asked. I could tell she was annoyed. The class twittered. I wanted to be invisible. Miss Jerry and Mother stepped in the hallway for a brief conversation. Mother came back in the doorway and crooked her finger at me. Get your books, we're going home, she said. I don't remember anything else that happened. I don't remember what Mother said, what Miss Jerry said. All I know is the next day at school, I was Darlene again. But at heart, I'm still Marilyn.
Fabulous. Fabulous. Now, folks, it takes a storyteller to fess up to something like that happened so long ago. And Darlene, should I call you Marilyn?
Yes, I accept both.
And you picked Marilyn because of that movie that you saw.
Yes. Oh, yes. Look for the silver lining. I can still remember it.
That's Now, I guess I don't think I ever gave myself a different name. But, you know, there's times when children feel like they need to enhance yes. where they come from, something like that.
Yes.
My goodness. Oh, I tell you what. Now that is a personal story. And I guess I would say, is it more your habit to write and tell personal stories than other genre like folk tales or fairy tales?
I seldom tell a story that I haven't written. I write personal stories, but I also write stories that I wrote for my students. They fell into like three categories. The first group I would call the character critters. And the second group I call them my swamp buddies. And then there are some that fall in between. A lot of them were inspired by the students. Like Gladys Gets Glasses was inspired by a fifth grader who came in my office crying because she had had to get glasses and they were making fun of her.
I think now when you set about creating a story like that, are you always reaching back to the past? Are you creating personal stories these days about contemporary things that happen as well?
When I create stories like that for the students, it's from scratch. It has nothing to do with me. The personal stories are from my past and do, but like the Swamp Buddies series, I set out to the character critters.
Character tales. The students enjoy the character tales, and you're able to bring an animal to life for them, or a situation, a couple of animals, an insect, something like that. Have those really come in from when you were working in the school? And are you still creating those?
They came from when I was working in the schools. I had a group of plush animals. So the puppy problem, I took a plush dog. And the second story, like I said, I was going through the living room. My husband was watching the Westminster Dog Show. And I thought, wouldn't it be like two little kids that had this mongrel dog, but they heard there's a dog show in town and they going to put in, Mom, I want to take my dog to the dog show. So I wrote Spot Goes to the Dog Show. And again, it was well received by the students and the teachers. So that inspired me to keep going. And each story came, some came from an incident with the student. Easter on the Bayou is about being colorblind. The Swamp Buddies tales came the second year. Mary Alice Fontenot, who wrote the Clovis the Crawfish books, told me that she started writing them to teach science to kindergarten students.
There you go.
So I thought, well, why can't I combine trying to promote good behavior and good ethics with social studies of Louisiana. So I set the Swamp Buddies series in the Atchafalaya Swamp. And I wrote, Scoop the Pelican Takes a Job, Robert Raccoon and the Swamp Monster, Christmas in the Atchafalaya Swamp, and some more in that series. But that it combines, and I created some activities, word puzzles, word searches, and other things that are in the book, Louisiana Stories for the Young at Heart. And well, so now, those were created especially for the students at Mary Goff Elementary School.
Well, now let's hear another one of your personal stories. Now, you told me the title of this is Mama Learns to Drive. So I'm guessing that's probably the topic as well.
That's
so
pretty much it.
Let's hear Mama Learns to Drive.
Okay. I grew up in the 1950s in rural Louisiana. That was before air conditioning, cell phones, computers, and television. Back in those days, most families owned one car that the husband drove to work. Wives took care of preserving the food, the home, and the family, with a garden for fresh fruits and fresh vegetables, and a cow for milk and butter, chickens for eggs, and a freezer stocked with meat. Women went to town to shop for staples once or twice a month. On shopping day, the wives took their husbands to work, then used the car to pay bills, run errands, and grocery shop. However, in my family, Daddy decreed that Mama would not drive. It wasn't for meanness, you understand, but for her own protection. You see, Mama had fainting spells. I especially remember the spell Mama had one hot Sunday morning. I was sitting in the third pew at Pleasant Hill Baptist Church. Mama was singing in the choir, and I saw her drop the Brodmann hymnal and sink below the choir rail. The service stopped. Everyone, including the preacher, was staring at Mama. Two big busted ladies in flowered dresses hovered over Mama, fanning her with their handkerchiefs. "Aren't you scared?" my friend Eva Phillips whispered. "Heck no, she does this all the time," I said. "That's why Daddy won't let her drive the car. It's just one of her fainting spells. She'll be all right in a minute." I quoted my daddy pretty much. In truth, those spells always frighten me a lot more than I let on. Well, eventually the doctor learned that Mama was anemic. She took vitamin B12 shots for a long time, and that stopped her fainting spells. But Daddy wasn't convinced. The last time I heard her ask Daddy to teach her to drive, he said, "No, what if you had one of your fainting spells while you were at the wheel? Why, you'd kill yourself. Now don't ask me again." She didn't. My daddy worked for the Rock Island Railroad, but he had a lifelong love affair with automobiles. He was an excellent mechanic, and he often brought home a car to repair it for a friend or coworker. So we weren't surprised the day Daddy towed home a black 1948 Plymouth and parked it in the yard. He came in the house and said, "I put chocks under the wheels of that Plymouth to keep it from rolling, and I don't want anybody driving that car." Well, the next week, Daddy started working a lot of overtime, and it was dark when he got home. So he didn't have time to work on the Plymouth. I noticed that Mama seemed especially interested in that car. And once I caught her sitting in the driver's seat, mumbling, "This is the clutch, this is the brake." Even so, I was surprised the afternoon Mama rolled and called me outside and said, "I'm going to learn how to drive this car, and I want you to help me. But what about your fainting spells?" "I haven't had one in a year, and the doctor said I can drive if I want to." I was relieved. If the doctor said it in 1950, it was gospel. "When I get in the car," Mama said, "you pull those chocks away from the wheel, then run, get on the porch so I won't run over you." That was pretty much incentive for me. I followed Mama's orders, and everything went just as she said it would. From then on, as soon as I got home from school, Mama took her position behind the steering wheel. At her nod, I'd pull the chocks from under the tires and scramble out of the way. At first, she was careful to guide the car in the loop in the dirt drive that Daddy's tires had dug. At first, she had to make several extra loops, but she got the hang pretty soon of taking her foot off the accelerator and pumping the clutch and the brake pedals furiously until the car coasted to a stop exactly where Daddy had parked it. "Now remember," she said, "this is our secret. Don't tell your daddy." She needn't have worried. This was one time I didn't want to be around when Daddy found out what was going on. I'd heard him say that nobody was to drive that car. I already felt like a traitor, but I had to admit, Mama's driving looked pretty good to me. After all, she hadn't hit the house or any pine trees. Well, Mama's confidence increased day, and one day she said, "I'm going to drive to Kathleen's house." Kathleen Brunson was our nearest neighbor, about halfway down the road. "I still can't back up," Mama said, "but if I make a loop in the empty field by Kathleen's, the car will be headed home and I won't have to turn it around." Mama's concentration was as great as a Grand Prix driver. At her signal, I yanked the chocks away from the wheels and climbed in the open passenger door and slammed it shut. Mama took a deep breath and turned the ignition. The engine caught the first time. Slowly, slowly, she let out the clutch and ground the shift into first gear. I thought Mama looked funny reaching to the poor floor pedals, but a look on her face warned me it wouldn't be too smart to laugh. The Plymouth slid forward like cold ketchup. Mama made a trial run through her usual loop and then headed the car down our dusty drive. She had a death grip on the steering wheel. We went down our dirt driveway over the cattle gap and turned onto the gravel road. Mama's face was beaming with triumph. I felt the car pick up speed and glanced at the speedometer. Mama was up to 10 miles an hour, the fastest she'd ever driven. As we neared Kathleen's, Mama took her foot off the gas pedal and began pumping the clutch and the brake to let the car come to a stop. Even I could see that Mama was getting good at judging the stopping distance. Our maiden excursion went without mishap. Kathleen was properly impressed with Mama's new skill, and she promised to keep her secret. We made it back home without anybody seeing us, and after that, we made several more trips down to Kathleen's. Things were going fine until the afternoon Daddy got off work early. He parked his pickup and walked over to the Plymouth. I saw him look at the back tires. Then he inspected the front tires. Saw him frown and he started toward the back of that car again. The more Daddy looked at that car, the more scared I got. I got whipped when I disobeyed Daddy. Would Mama get whipped too? And even more important, would I get whipped for keeping her secret? I ran into the house and alerted Mama only seconds before Daddy stomped up the steps and demanded, "Who's been driving that Plymouth?" To my surprise, Mama looked him straight in the eye and said, "I have. I don't have fainting spells anymore, and the doctor said I could learn to drive." Daddy's face looked like a reddish. He opened his mouth and shut it. He was trying to speak, but Mama was on a roll. "I asked you to teach me to drive, but you told me don't ask you again, so I didn't. I taught myself." When she finally ran down, I held my breath, waiting for Daddy to erupt. To my surprise, he took Mama in his arms and pulled her close. And when he spoke, his voice had gone from gruff to gentle. "Oh, honey, I bought that old Plymouth for you, and I intended to teach you to drive it." Mama knew she had him then. "Then why did you tell me not to drive it?" "I didn't want anyone driving the car until I got it fixed." "The car runs fine. It starts every time." "I know," Daddy agreed. "There's nothing wrong with the motor." "Then why'd you tell me not to drive it?" "Because it doesn't have any brakes." Mama fainted.
Oh, no, 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 no. That is just plain wrong. Now, I have to tell you, now, folks, if you're just joining us, that is Miss Darlene DeFore, regaling us with the story of her mama learning to drive. And Darlene, it especially caught my attention, the fainting in the church. And the what? Say that part again. It was the large-chested women fanning her.
Two large busted women there in flowered dresses.
In flowered dresses. Now, folks, that is an illustration right there of a fine storyteller. You could picture that in your mind's eye just as clear as if you'd have been sitting with her in that pew watching that scene unfold. Darlene's doing a fantastic job tonight on So What's Your Story right here on KPFT 90.1, Houston's community station. And you know, we're also on 89.5 in Galveston and 91.9 in Huntsville. Don't forget KPFT's free internet on HD2 to meet your news, arts, and entertainment needs. We're so proud to be here because just as KPFT is Houston's community station, So What's Your Story is Houston's community show. Our guests are ordinary folks with extraordinary stories to tell, stories about loss, jubilation, and perhaps even learning to drive. Sometimes students even use us as a creative platform, artists, newsmakers, your neighbors, all finding a home for their stories right here. Now, KPFT can't bring you all these stories, all the music programming and everything else, all the other fine programs here on KPFT without your support. You tune in to Houston's Community Station 90.1 KPFT because you know you're going to hear the finest and widest variety of programming in Houston. And it's people like you that make all this possible. Give us a call now. And tell us you love the show and give us some support, 713-526-5738. Or the next time you're around your computer, just hit kpfp.org and you can join all the other members supporting the station right there. And by the way, you can become a sustaining member, and that's automatically renewing that membership to help us to support this station in a very real way. Now back to Darlene. You were a school counselor, and you alluded to this earlier when we were talking, and the listeners have a burning question, and that is there really a permanent record of all your achievements from your schooling days kept somewhere?
It's called a cumulative record.
Okay.
And it has your grades, the ones you passed, the ones you
didn't pass. Does it have your conduct scores?
That's the behavior record.
Oh, no, the behavior record. Now, my teacher told us that it was in some silo in Iowa somewhere under strict guard.
Well, that was before computers. Oh. But that was before computers. Now that everything's on computer, it just gonna go with you.
Oh my goodness.
So mind your manners.
That is it. You know, I did pretty well in school sometimes, but you know what they put on my report card, they would say runs with scissors or doesn't work up to potential. I think that was ADD before there was ADD, perhaps. That's what they called it. Does not work up to potential. Oh,
I
Lord.
Was so glad when they quit grading penmanship and conduct.
Oh, the penmanship. No, you couldn't even read my chicken scratch even today. Now, this next story you have for us, going to take us back to elementary school for the tale of a girl who thinks it's her fault that her mother left the family. And this, you call this Seeds of Greatness. So let's hear that story.
Larry, this story, some of it comes right out of the mouth of a six-year-old who came in my office one day and said, Mama left home last night. It was my fault. And so that's the start of the story. Oof. The Seeds of Greatness title comes from, there was a special needs student, maybe fifth or sixth grade, And she was always in a fight. It was one of those long stories, but I was working with her one day and I heard myself say, "I see seeds of greatness in you." And I thought, well, that's a God thing. Because in the natural, what I was talking to her about had very little chance of happening. But so those, I combined those things. And so this story is a composite, and this is the way it goes. My mama left home when I was in the third grade. It was my fault. I told something I wasn't supposed to tell at the supper table one night. Daddy started yelling at mama. Mama started crying and they got in a big fuss. The next day she moved out and left Daddy and my older brother and me. Before she left, mama took off her heart-shaped locket and fastened it around my neck. I wore that necklace every day, even when I took a shower. Daddy loved us, but he worked long hours, so he didn't spend much time with us. Sometimes Daddy drank a little. Sometimes Daddy drank a lot. My brother and I did the best we could to look after the house and take care of ourselves. At first, I thought if I could just be good enough, Mama would come back home. I did the best I could to behave and to keep the house clean. But no matter how much I did or how good I was, Mama didn't come back home. That's when I got angry. I cried when Daddy forgot my birthday and didn't get me a cake like Mama always did. Pretty soon I was angry at people who were happy because I was feeling hurt and miserable. Daddy did the best he could, but he didn't know much about taking care of girls. He took me and my brother to the same barber, and the barber cut my hair just as short as my brother's, and my brother laughed. The next year, when I outgrew my clothes, I had to wear my brother's old jeans and shirts, even his underwear. It was just all I had. One of the girls at school saw that underwear and made fun of me. I cried because they hurt my feelings. But when I told my brother about it, he said, "You have to toughen up and fight back." I did. By the time I was in the fifth grade, I had me an attitude. I'd learned to settle things with my fist or a smart, sassy answer, and most people left me alone after one or two little bouts. The older kids played together at recess, but no one played with me. And when they picked teams, nobody ever picked me. That hurt my feelings, so I'd threaten to beat them up, or sometimes I'd spit on them. I got sent to the office a lot. I wasn't a very good student either. For one thing, I didn't like my teacher, and I made sure she knew it. I'd stay up late at night watching the Disney Channel on TV, and I missed a lot of school because I didn't want to go. And when I was there, I didn't pay much attention. I never studied, did my homework, so I made bad grades on tests, and I was retained that year. Summer was nice, though. I stayed up as late as I wanted, slept as late as I wanted. I played a lot of softball. I was a great second baseman. When school started back the next year, I had a new teacher. The first day of school, Mrs. Cotton told us, "Every person is valuable. Everyone is special. Everyone in this class has the ability to be a great person." She means everybody but me, I thought. Later at recess, I walked by some girls who were talking. One of them looked at me and laughed and rolled her eyes. Well, I told her. Well, never mind what I told her, but it got me sent home for 3 days. I didn't care. I slept and watched TV. Miss Cotton kept me in at recess the first day I was back. I said, "What did I do now? I just got back. I ain't had time to get in any trouble." But instead of fussing at me, she reached in her pocket and pulled out a little packet. She opened it and poured some seeds in her hand and held it out to me. "Do you see these seeds?" she said. "Seeds hold the promise of new life inside. If I plant them in good soil, and give them water and sunshine, the seeds will grow into a flower or a vegetable. She said, people are a lot like plants, and I see seeds of greatness in you. I thought the woman was crazy. You mean I'm going to turn into a carrot or a petunia? She smiled and said, no, I mean you have the ability to be an important person. Oh, you got to be rich or famous to be important. I've seen that on TV. Being rich or famous is not what makes someone special or important. We can be born rich or famous just based on who our parents are, but becoming special or important takes something greater. I never thought about that before. We all have seeds of greatness inside us. It's called potential. But whether we become a winner or a loser in life depends on how we use our abilities. People aren't born champions. They grow to become champions. Then she poured some seeds into my hand and said, these seeds are a lot like the students in this class. Some are round and dark. Some are long and yellow. Others are white. Others are pointed. They don't look the same way, but they're still all seeds. Every seed, just like every person, is important and should not be damaged or destroyed. Both people and plants need time to mature and grow to become great person. Great people have seeds of kindness. They treat others the way they want to be treated. They never take advantage of others. And great people have seeds of honesty. They do not lie, even when they might get in trouble for telling the truth. Great people have seeds of responsibility. They do what they say they will do when they say they will do it. They follow the rules, as simple as if you make a mess, you clean it up. Being responsible also means that we do not hurt other people, even when we are angry with them. Hurting people hurt others. Using your fists or weapons to get even will only cause you more trouble. Remember, there are consequences for all of our actions. And great people have seeds of love. They care about their friends and neighbors, and they try to help them. They never damage the roots of others by making fun of them, because when we criticize or ridicule others, even if we're only teasing, we sow seeds of doubt and discouragement. Our words become weeds that might prevent them from becoming the awesome person they're meant to be. Then she said, both plants and people go through seasons. Just like plants don't thrive unless they're rooted in fertile soil and have enough sunshine and water, people suffer a drought too when they don't get the love and attention they need to grow strong and straight. Dry seasons come to all of us. The people who survive the tough times know how to draw on their inner resources to get through hard seasons. Then she said, there's one more important seed. I call it the extraordinary seed. I said, what's that? She said, it's a special gift that some people have. Some people are especially talented at sports or music or writing, or they may be good at working on computers, raising a family, singing or dancing or building things or repairing automobiles. The list is endless. And what's exciting is that some people have more than one extraordinary seed. They're exceptionally good at two or three things. She looked me straight in the eye and said, I want you to grow, and I want you to help others grow. Start discovering your extraordinary seed and developing it. Well, later that night when I was in bed, I wondered what my extraordinary seed could be. I couldn't sing or dance or play an instrument, but I was good at softball and basketball. The last thing I remember before I fell asleep was the teacher saying, I want you to help others grow. I wondered how I could do that. A couple of days later, the boy next to me made an A on his math test. He usually made C's. I made an F. I didn't study. I said, that's real good. You must have studied hard. He got the biggest smile on his face and said, I sure did. A couple of days later, I saw a classmate pick up some trash on the playground, and I knew she didn't throw it down, so I thanked her. And the next time those girls rolled their eyes at me, I turned my head and pretended I didn't even see them. My teacher had a conference with my daddy, and he took me shopping and got me some girl clothes. Then he took me to a beauty shop, and a woman gave me a haircut that made me look like a girl instead of a boy. And she showed me how to take care of my hair, and I did exactly what she told me to do. After that, I started coming to school every day, doing my homework, paying attention, and asking questions when I didn't understand things. My grades improved, but best of all, I had friends to play with at recess, so I didn't feel so alone. I even got invited to a sleepover at a friend's house. We had a lot of fun. Well, I'm a teacher now, and I still wear the locket my mama gave me. Inside is a picture of mama, and opposite her picture is a seed with an X on it for the extraordinary seed. I use it every year to share Miss Cotton's story about the seeds of greatness with students in my classroom. I hope this story helps you to become the person that God intends you to be. Remember, plant your seeds in fertile soil and tend them well. Develop your extraordinary seed. Nurture the potential for greatness in yourself and others. And that way, you'll reap a harvest of happiness and success in life. The end.
Well, there you have it, folks. Seeds of greatness. And what more would you expect than hearing something like that from Miss Darlene Dufour on So What's Your Story? Now, this is a great time for us to thank our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild. And that's a great place to learn the art of storytelling. They meet virtually the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30. The next swap is just a few weeks away. You can head to their website, houstonstorytellers.org, and they'll have the Zoom link there, and you can jump on and share some stories if you want to, and certainly hear some stories. And by the way, on that same website, you can go to the radio program link and see archived copies of So What's Your Story from as far back as 2008, I think. And also, don't forget that our friends at Moth at Warehouse Live, they're back in full swing the second Tuesday of the month. We are always happy to have folks come in. They tell us they hear those Moth stories. Don't forget, too, there's the Tejas Storytelling Association, and there's the National Storytelling Network. And Darlene would remind us that storytelling is all over the state of Texas and beyond. So even if you're out beyond the confines of the Grand Parkway, you can find your storytelling peeps. And you know, folks, let me remind you one more time that support of KPFT is what brings So What's Your Story to the airwaves. And your support's like a sturdy corner post in a big old grass pasture. Without it, the fence falls over and the cows get out, and we can't have that. So give us a call, 713-526-5738, or check out kpft.org and become a member right there on your computer. And Darlene, a minute ago you said Characters and Critters series and Swamp Buddies, but I happen to know that you've also been called a Rapping Granny.
And well, that's true.
That's for one particular tale. And why don't you give us your Rapping Granny right now?
All right. Well, I wish I had written this, but I didn't. I learned it, and I tell it with the permission of the great Bobby Norfolk and his wife, Sherry. And so this is called the Billy Goat Gruff Rap. A one, two, a one, two, three. This is the tale of some goats and a troll, and the troll lived under a bridge, you know. Well, he guarded that bridge both night and day. He'd gobble you up if you went that way, but the grass was greener on the other side, so the goats decided to give it a try. The littlest billy goat was the first that day. His feet went trip, trap, trip, trap. Hey, who's that trip, trapping over my bridge? Hey, fool, be cool. It's me, you see. I've got a hunch you'll be my lunch. But I'm so small and you're so tall. Sit in the shade, you'll be repaid. There's a bigger billy goat in this parade. So the troll let him pass to eat some grass. The middle billy goat was the next that day. His feet went trip, trap, trip, trap. Hey, who's that trip, trapping over my bridge? Hey, fool, be cool. It's me, you see. I've got a hunch you'll be my lunch. But I'm so small and you're so tall. Sit in the shade, you'll be repaid. There's a bigger billy goat in this parade. So the troll led him over to eat some clover. The biggest billy goat was the last that day. His feet went trip, trap, trip, trap. Hey, who's that trip, trapping over my bridge? Hey, fool, be cool. It's me, you see. I've got a hunch you'll be my lunch. I've got two sharp horns to run you through. I've got four sharp hoofs to cut you to. So come on up and give it a try. We'll see which one is gonna get by. Well, the troll was a fool. He couldn't be cool. He tried to fight, but the goat was right. With his two sharp horns, he ran him through. With his four sharp hooves, he cut him too. Then he went on over to the other side where the grass was greener, and he said with pride, that troll was a fool. He couldn't be cool. He should have learned not to be so greedy. He should have learned how to help the needy. Then the goats ate grass till they got fat. Trip, trap, trip, trap. That's that.
Outstanding. Now, I've got to tell you that we don't often have a rapping granny on KPFT on So What's Your Story? This might be the very first time that we've had that. Now, Darlene, what? If someone was to approach you and say, hey, I'd like to become a storyteller, what advice would you offer them?
I would remind them, number one, you already are a storyteller. We all are. That's how we preserve our heritage. And it's disappearing. So it's very important that you tell your family stories, whether they're funny, whether they're painful. It doesn't matter. It's how you look at it that makes the difference.
Do you think folks would be apprehensive to tell a story? Do people need convincing to tell their stories?
Yes, because they feel like, nobody's interested in my story.
Nobody's interested.
But that's not true. We are interested in your stories. We want to hear your stories because they develop a kinship between us and they lead into our stories. Something you tell in your story sparks a memory in mine. And so that brings me to a memory of a story in my family.
Excellent.
Now, some people do not have good memories to tell about. My advice, make it up.
Make it up.
You're a
never
story.
Let the truth get in the make way of a good story.
Absolutely.
That is outstanding. Well, folks, you've been listening to Darlene Dufour, transplanted to Conroe from Louisiana. She was a school counselor. She's a storyteller. She's a former radio host herself. I hope she doesn't have too much of a bad critique about my job here hosting. Darlene, I'm so pleased that you took time out to come and be with us this evening. Any parting words for our audience as they're driving home from work or driving to work or going to the mall? Who knows?
Number one, it was an honor to be invited. And number two, make your pledge. They cannot survive without your funds. I know you may not have a lot right now. Times are tough. Pledge and donate whatever you can to keep radio going and keep What's Your Story going on the radio.
Well, there you go. I couldn't have said it better myself. We're going to wrap up the evening here. I think right after this is going to be our R&B Solid Gold with Charles Hightower is coming up next. And folks, let me just take one more opportunity to remind you, just as Darlene said, take an opportunity if you can, whatever you can. So What's Your Story is very happy to be here at 5 o'clock on Thursday evenings, but we can't be here if we don't have your support. So please take an opportunity, give us a call, check out the website, kpft.org. You know, stories connect our lives together and give us a lot of meaning, give us a lot of relief, give us a lot of comfort during the tough times that happen around. And I always like to remember Rudyard Kipling. He said, if history were taught in the form of stories, well, it would never be forgotten. And don't forget, it's never too late to get out there, live happily ever after. With that, I'll say good night, y'all.
Hi. On Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig, we scour the news from hyperlocal to international for stories that might be under your radar. With my co-host, Andrew Ferguson, we then add multifaceted analysis with wide-ranging and good-faith discussion, ranging from political to philosophical to just plain fun. Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig covers perspectives from center-right to far-left and in between. It's a part of the political spectrum you don't hear much on local radio, and it's donors like you that make it possible. We can't do this without your help. That's why I'm asking you to make your tax-deductible donation to KPFT 90.1 Community Media. Call now at 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-5738. Or go online to kpft.org and make your pledge of tax-deductible support to keep commercial-free community radio on the air. Thank you.
The Morales Memorial Foundation invites the community to join in supporting our students' educational success during the 25th Annual Back to School Supply Giveaway on August 13th at Morales Funeral Home at 2901 Canal Street. This is a milestone anniversary and look forward to serving over 2,000 students and distributing over $30,000 in supplies and prizes for the biggest annual drive yet. For more information, visit www.moralesmemorialfoundation.com or call 713-223-1167.
So you're listening to KPFT, but where are you listening? On your car radio at 90.1 FM? At your desk, catching our live stream on kpft.org? Maybe you're in a cafe, browsing the archives, or interacting on Facebook, or the TuneIn or Pacifica apps. There are many ways to access the colorful mix of local music, news, and programming on KPFT, and they're all free, but they don't come cheap. KPFT is able to offer these digital services because of small donations from listener members. Becoming a member is quick and easy. Just call us or text GIVE to 713-526-5738. 5738 or go to kpft.org and click the donate button. Your contributions help us develop and sustain new ways to share the voices and programs you've come to rely on. Wherever you are, we are here. This is Community.